Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast with your host, Andrew Keel. This is the podcast where you can get the education you need to invest 100% passively in the highly profitable niche of mobile home parks.
Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Keel, and today we have a very special guest on the show, the king of cost segregation studies, Mr. Yonah Weiss. Yonah, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So a little background on Yonah. He's a cost segregation expert and a commercial real estate tax consultant. And if you're in commercial real estate and on LinkedIn, you likely know of Yonah and his content as business director at Madison Specs and as a national cost segregation leader. Yonah has assisted clients in saving hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes through cost segregation. And Yonah also hosts his own podcast, the Wise Advice Podcast. So excited to dive in here, Yonah.
Yeah, likewise. This is a lot of fun. Obviously, a topic that I'm very passionate about and enjoy talking about. So yeah, let's give it a roll.
Awesome. Would you mind starting out by telling our listeners a little about your story and how you went from your background in teaching to business director at Madison Specs and, you know, saving clients over hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes via cost segs?
Absolutely. So I've been in real estate for close to 10 years now, but before that I was a teacher. So that's really my background and has always been my passion. I did that for about 15 years, but obviously at a certain point, the teaching salary, as everyone knows, is not so great. And with a growing family, I decided to kind of branch out and see what else was out there, maybe get a second job or do something on the side. And real estate kept coming up in conversation among friends when I mentioned that I was looking for new opportunities. And so I just tried it out, dipped my feet in the water and started out doing some commercial mortgage brokering, actually, and then some hard money lending with a friend of mine. And then we did a couple of fix and flips. I got my realtor's license just to kind of, find deals and was doing some deals that way. But eventually, I was always open to opportunities. And none of those things that I was doing, what I was like really passionate about, just kind of learning everything there was to know about real estate and found it fascinating. And the networking was incredible for sure. I ended up meeting tons of people. And one of those people that I met, an opportunity came up to work for this company, Madison Commercial Real Estate, Madison Specs, which is the biggest national cost segregation company, which I didn't know anything about at the time, by the way. Cost seg was not something that was on my radar. But surprisingly to me was that neither was it on anyone else's. Meaning I literally, when I found out about this cost seg company, this opportunity to join the business development, I reached out to all the people that I had met in the previous couple of years doing real estate. You just put a ping out there, an email, text, whatever. You heard about this thing, cost seg, and literally over 95% of the people responded. They never even heard of it. Okay. We're talking about people who were in the real estate industry, whether they were owners or brokers or lenders or et cetera. And I was shocked by that. Now, there were a few people that were in the business for a long time, developers and people who were real estate owners who knew what cost seg was. In fact, one of my mentors who I had reached out to mentioned to me that, we use Madison for all of our cost seg. And I was like, okay, that's a good sign, right? Someone that I look up to.
Totally. And can I interrupt? So what year was this that this person approached you and was coming in? When was that?
Yeah, this was around 2015, 2016 or so, I think. So yeah, about 8 years ago.
Talk about timing, right? Right before the Trump tax law went into effect with the bonus depreciation. I mean, just happened to come into play. So kudos for you, man. That's amazing.
Exactly. And everything happens for a reason, I truly believe. And you're absolutely right. The fact that the Trump tax bill that passed, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was huge, introduced the 100% bonus depreciation, which really gave cost segregation a name, on the map.
Blew up.
And it was like right at that time, right before that, I had, got into the business and it was my job to really just teach the subject. And I found this was a perfect opportunity. Now there's something everyone wants to do for good reason. And I remember talking, I was on Joe Fairless's the Best Ever podcast right around that time, and back in 2017. And it was like, you know, this new law just passed. Like, yeah, tell us all about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Rocket launching. For those of us that maybe not, aren't aware of cost segregation and cost segregation studies, you know, can you give our listeners a brief explanation of what it is and why it's still relevant in 2024, even as, you know, the bonus depreciation is sunsetting?
Absolutely. So, you know, just very simple layman's terms, what cost seg is, it's a very complicated tax strategy. But to simplify it, all we need to know is that any time you buy a property, whether it's, you know, residential or commercial, as long as it's not your primary residence, any type of rental or business property, you can take a deduction called depreciation. Okay, so this is an income tax deduction. The IRS says, because you bought this property, now you can literally write off the entire value of the property over a long period of time, albeit, but, you know, a little bit every single year. And so that's called depreciation deduction. And again, it's just a deduction. So the name depreciation, even though it sounds negative, it sounds like your property's going down in value. In fact, it's not. And it's just the name of a deduction as if it were going down in value. And therefore, it's based on your purchase price. And you get to start your 27 and a half years. That's how much residential properties depreciate for, according to the IRS. Commercial is over 39 years. Arbitrary numbers, but you get to start that the day you buy the property, which means it's totally dependent on you as the owner. And every time the property changes hands, that new depreciation schedule starts over. Now, that's a long time, right, to wait to take all those deductions, right? A little bit every single year is about 2-3% if you take the numbers. There's something called cost segregation. This is where it comes in, as we're going to segregate the cost, right? We're going to break down the purchase price into different categories. And certain components can actually depreciate faster, according to the IRS. Now, it used to be called component depreciation, which makes a lot more sense than cost segregation, because we're just saying there's personal property, there's furniture, there's fixtures, there's carpeting, and all these kind of things that depreciates on a five-year schedule. And then there's land improvements, and we'll talk a lot about this soon when we go into mobile home parks, but the land improvements is the concrete, pavement, landscaping, you know, roads, sidewalks, anything like that, fencing, anything that's outside that's not the land, because land itself doesn't depreciate. So that's the one small amount we have to deduct from our purchase price to get our depreciation. And these things, the land improvements over a 15-year schedule, the personal property over a five-year schedule, these are things that we can accelerate the depreciation of and then take those deductions at a faster rate. So essentially, it's a cash flow mechanism, right? That by allowing you to take bigger deductions during the earlier years of ownership, you can pay less taxes and be able to scale at a much faster rate.
And how does all of this relate? Let's circle it back to mobile home parks. How does it relate to a mobile home park investor, and why is cost segregation important to them?
So an amazing thing about mobile home parks is that it's a little bit different than most types of commercial properties because there's very little structure involved. So this structural component is, you know, like a building, right? The walls, the roof, foundation, all that good stuff is what's the majority of the depreciation is always going to be in that, meaning that's going to be over that 27 and a half year period. However, with mobile home parks, there's very little structure involved, especially if we're talking about tenant-owned home parks, where essentially you as the owner or investors are buying a park. You have the land, again, which doesn't depreciate. And then we have the land improvements. And essentially, that's pretty much it. There is a small amount that is allocated to the infrastructure, like plumbing and septic and electric mains. Those are all considered 27 and a half year depreciation. So that's the only thing that's considered structural. But there's no other structure on the property. Essentially, the majority, sometimes 50 to 70, sometimes 80% of that purchase price can go towards cost segregation, that 15-year land improvements.
Very cool. And can we go through the four components, right? You talked about land, you know, and typically in a mobile home park we're buying in the Midwest, you know, you can allocate the assessed value. Is that how you come up with the value for the land that cannot be depreciated? And then there's land improvements, which you talked about, like roads, fencing, utility lines, landscaping, pavement, and that's all 15-year property.
Correct.
And there's buildings, and some mobile home parks have buildings, right? Like a clubhouse, or maybe there's, you know, some other like storage buildings or something like that.
Yeah, and sometimes there's even, you know, a small, I've seen many mobile home parks where there's like a single family, you know, property.
Yeah,
you know,
in the middle of it or out front, exactly. And then there's the five-year property, which would be like the personal property, the park-owned homes, you know, the carpet, the siding, flooring, appliances, things like that. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So those are the things, and all those categories you discussed are exactly right, right? The land, which we're going to use in many cases, the tax assessor to figure out what the percentage of land to improvements is. There are other ways to find that out, including appraisal or things like that. Again, the majority is going to be the land improvements, right? The 15-year, right. You think about a mobile home park, you have the concrete pads under each home. You have the roads, you have landscaping, you have sidewalks, and even a playground, right? Playground equipment, all that is 15-year fencing, signage, any of that and all of that. And again, that's going to be the majority of the value of the property. The 5-year property, the personal property, is only going to be if you have, you know, an office or you have some furniture in there, mm-hmm. or you have a single family, or you have some park-owned homes. Any of the, you know, interior that's going to be non-structural in those homes is going to be considered the 5-year depreciation.
And the cost segregation study, the report, right, is basically evidence in case you get audited by the IRS, you follow their certain mandates and basically would show them, hey, this is how we came up with these numbers. And you have engineers and so forth that go out to the property and measure square footage and things like that. Is that a ballpark how it goes down?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's, you know, think about it like an appraisal, but a very detailed one. In using the IRS's, you know, kind of handbook, what's called the Cost Segregation Audit Techniques Guide, and there's something called the MACRIS, which stands for the Modified Adjusted Cost Recovery System. And that system basically tells every single component that there possibly can be in any type of property and what the schedule is, what, you know, if it's a 5-year depreciation, if it's a 15-year depreciation. There are even some things that are on a 7 or 10. Those are not, don't apply to mobile home parks. And then what's on the 27.5? So yes, the engineer who's a qualified engineer comes in to the property, takes a very detailed assessment, you know, pictures, videos, measurements, et cetera, and then comes back and creates this very detailed report. In that has a new depreciation schedule, which is that just shows you and your accountant how much you can deduct every single year for depreciation. And this, you know, detailed report, which can be, you know, 80, 90, 100 pages long, is really for your records, like you said, if in case it, God forbid, you're ever audited, you can show, you know, you're showing the work.
And I'm a huge fan of cost seg. We order one, you know, still on all of our properties. And it's been, I mean, the carry forward that we get is huge. It's been a really big help. I guess being that it's August 2024, you know, bonus depreciation's kind of being phased out. I think it's 60% this year and 40% next year. So when does it not make sense, Yona, to order a cost segregation study for our listeners?
There are some times when it doesn't make sense. So the first thing we're always going to look at, right, is the individual, okay? You as personally, right? Getting a cost segregation study creates or increases these huge deductions through the early years. But if you can't use those deductions, for example, you don't have any income, right? Or you have enough deductions or expenses from other types of business or properties, et cetera, then, you know, getting these extra deductions that you can't actually use in the current year is not very beneficial. So that's always the first thing to look at. The second thing in terms of the person is, are you a real estate professional? Okay. And there's a specific rules regarding whether you are a real estate professional or not. And that means if you, basically how depreciation works, it's a deduction that can only be used against passive income. And what the IRS defines as passive income is real estate rental property income. Okay. And doesn't include stocks or bonds or anything like that. That's not considered passive according to the IRS. So in order to use the depreciation, right, it only gets to be used against any investments or any real estate income that you have unless you or your spouse are considered a real estate professional. Now, this is where it makes a huge difference to someone who's in the real estate game full time, because once you do that, you no longer have that limitation and you can use these deductions to offset any source of income whatsoever. Okay, so getting a cost seg done certainly helps to offset any income that you have from that property or from any other investments. But if you're that real estate professional or your spouse is, you can then take these huge amounts of deductions and not only wipe out any income tax liability you have from your rental properties, but then carry that over to other sources of income, whether it's a W-2 or et cetera, any other. So that's the biggest thing to look at when you're talking about getting a cost seg.
And that's huge, the real estate professional status. Like my old neighbors, I was talking to them the other day, and their whole retirement plan is that, you know, they're both high income earners, But the husband, you know, works at a big home builder. You know, the whole plan was, hey, that she's going to retire from her W-2 job and they have some rental properties and the number of hours she'll start to meet that requirement when it comes to like property management and sales. She's doing some sales. So her whole retirement plan is she's going to go into, real estate professional status, and their income's actually going to go up when she retires because of the tax savings. So it's a really important designation that you should research. Do you happen to know what the exact definition is, of the number of hours that are required?
So yeah, it's two requirements. First of all, you have to be the majority of your working hours during that year. And it is something that's looked at on a year-by-year basis. So the majority has to be spent in the real estate trader business. Okay. So you have to be spending more than 50% of your time. And by the way, if you have a W-2, a full-time job, you cannot simultaneously also be considered a real estate professional simply because the IRS cannot consider, someone working more than 40 hours a week, right? So
gotcha.
Just go out. And the second qualification is it's a minimum of 750 hours a year. Okay. So that means you can't just retire and still get that status. You need to actually be working, materially participating in some sort of real estate business, which the IRS also clearly defines what that is. There's certain things that do apply, certain things that don't apply.
Awesome. So earlier today, I was listening, re-listening to an episode you did with Ferd Nieman, my buddy, the MHP Lawyer podcast. And there was great info on that. Back in 2020 is when you recorded that, right? Back in the COVID days, and we had 100% bonus depreciation. But now in 2024, right, we get the 60% bonus, which is still, still amazing. But, you mentioned that there was like a 10x benefit during that recording. Is it still a 10x benefit or is it a 6x benefit?
Yeah, it's not as great as it was, because the way that the bonus depreciation worked with the 100% is that any amount of the accelerated deductions, remember we talked about the 5-year, the 15-year property, you could have taken that with the 100% bonus, which applied from 2018 through the end of 2022, 100% of those deductions up front, right? So that's a huge amount. And if you just do the simple math, let's say you buy a property, for $1 million and we're taking up 20% for land, right? So we're left with 800,000. And then it comes along Costeg and says, I'm doing, taking 50% just for mobile loan parks. It could be up to 80%, but just let's keep it simple. 50% of that I'm taking as bonus depreciation, right? So that's $400,000 on a $1 million purchase, a $400,000 first year deduction, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's crazy. Now think about that. If you bought a $1 million property and only put 20% down, right? So you're getting literally like double the amount of deductions in the first year. So, I mean, it's a huge return. I don't know about the 10X. I don't know. Maybe that was a little bit exaggerating or maybe using some of the numbers that,
Well, Ferd gave an example. Yeah. He said he bought a park for $1.3 million and, he wrote off $800K, which is $200K in tax savings after spending, the $4,000 for the Costeg study.
Right.
And he only owned it for 10 days. Of that year. He said he bought the property December 21st of that year. I think it was 2019. And then because of the 100% bonus depreciation, he was able to, take all of that benefit in that year and it saved him a ton. So that's huge.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is huge. Now, as you mentioned, the bonus depreciation, when it came into law, it had a phase out component to it, which means that in 2023, if you bought a property, it was 80%. For 2024, buy a property this year, it's 60% bonus, which means you can only take 60% of those accelerated deductions. Now, even though at the time of this recording, in August of 2024, we still have people getting their taxes for 2023 on extension done, right? The extension deadline for corporations is September 15th. For individuals, is October 15th. So still plenty of people getting this done for the 2023 taxes. And so it is a huge benefit. And again, the bonus depreciation percentage amount goes when the property was purchased. So even if you bought a property in 2022 and haven't yet done a Costeg study, right? Maybe you just filed straight line, just regular depreciation. You can this year take your tax returns and do a Costeg without having to amend your previous year's taxes and still claim the 100% bonus because the property was purchased in 2022.
And tell me about this, right? So what about capital expenditures? You bought the property in 2022 And since then, you've added, you know, you invested $500,000 or $1 million into the property and improvements. Can't you count those as well into the cost segregation? Not just the purchase price, but, you know, the additional CapEx spend?
Absolutely. Yeah. Any money that's spent in capital improvements is depreciated, which means you can add that later to your depreciation schedule. The difference is, you know, when you buy a property, that's when it's placed in service, or whenever you do place it in service, that's when the depreciation is going to begin based on that. Now, when you add more money in, it's that money, those improvements are going to have a new depreciation schedule because it's going to begin only when that asset is placed in service. So let's say, you know, a few months in or 6 months in or a year or two in, you decide to, you know, pave the roads, right? Or whatever, right? And you spend $50,000 on paving the roads. That $50,000 can now be depreciated in new land improvements, and now you can do bonus depreciation on that as well.
That's awesome. Let's talk goodwill, because this is something in that episode that I instantly changed in our contracts when I listened to your episode with Ferd back in 2020. You know, we were taking every time, you know, 30% of the purchase price in goodwill, and that was kind of recommended by our attorney. But let's talk about your feedback on goodwill, and has that changed at all since 2020, you know, with the new depreciation schedule here in 2024?
Yeah, you know, goodwill is something that's very, very common when you're dealing with a business acquisition. And simply put, when you're dealing with mobile home parks, it's very common to allocate a certain component to goodwill. And the reason why a lot of people do that, again, we talked about that on that episode, if anyone wants to check that out as well. Is that
I will put that in the show notes, the link to that one, because that's a solid one.
Yeah. So one of the main reasons why people do that is to reduce the amount of property tax, essentially, because say you buy a property for $1 million, okay, and you allocate, you know, 50% of that to goodwill, that means your purchase price of the property is really only $500,000. Now, when it comes to the tax assessment, it's only going to be based on the $500,000 instead of the million. And that's a good thing. However, the goodwill can be depreciated. However, it doesn't apply to bonus depreciation. And the goodwill is depreciated on a 15-year schedule, but it's not eligible for the bonus depreciation. And so therefore, it's something just to kind of make that calculation and say, yes, it's a way to do that to reduce potential property taxes. However, you're going to reduce the amount that you can, you know, claim as depreciation for bonus depreciation.
So you would still, you know, you'd look at it on a property by property basis, but you would still say, hey, allocating, you know, I guess it's an individual basis, but you would look at allocating as little as possible to goodwill so that you can maximize the bonus depreciation, even though it's only 60% now. Yeah. Okay. A lot of people have a lack of understanding about depreciation recapture. You mind touching on that and how it impacts your bottom line upon disposition?
Anytime you buy a property, obviously you're getting the benefit of using the depreciation, right? But whenever you sell a property, you're going to be subject to a tax similar to capital gain tax, and it's called depreciation recapture tax. Now, one thing to just make very clear is that recapture does not mean you're giving it back. Okay. A lot of people misunderstand this and you know, just explain it wrong. Misnomer is really the word I'm looking for, right? It's taking recapture does not mean they're actually taking it back. It just means it's the name of a tax that you're going to be taxed on, the amount of depreciation taken. So similar to capital gain, you know that if you buy a property for $1 million, you sell it for two, that $1 million of gain, you're going to be taxed on that amount, and you know, typically 20-25%, et cetera. Similarly, any amount of depreciation taken is going to be taxed upon sale. Okay. So you took $500,000 depreciation, you're going to be taxed on that amount. And it's actually a blended tax rate. There are certain things that are on your ordinary income tax rate level. There are certain components of it that are on a max, like capital gain max at 25%. And there's actually a third blended, which applies to the 15-year land improvements, which is a combination of the two. And so it's a pretty complicated tax to come up with. The one thing that is really clear is that it's always going to be less than the amount of tax you would have paid had you not done the cost seg and just paid income tax, whatever your ordinary income tax rate is, right? Meaning there's always going to be a spread and arbitrage between the tax rate later on the recapture, which is going to be less than what your income tax rate is. Now, there's a couple of things really important to note about recapture tax. Being subject to a tax does not mean you have to pay the tax. Okay, there's a very big difference. And that's really one of the big benefits of COSEG is that it's a tax strategy. Exactly like we started out the episode talking about this complicated tax strategy. And the fact is, you can use depreciation or you can use deductions to offset other sorts of taxes. Okay, so that's one big thing to remember. The second thing is there are ways to either defer or eliminate that recapture tax as well. So being subject to a tax does not mean you have to pay it. Again, there's ways to defer it. There's ways to reduce it or eliminate it entirely. One very common way is through the 1031 exchange, which defers that amount. Another very common one, which is also new with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is called Opportunity Zones, a little bit less commonly known, but an amazing strategy to not only defer capital gain tax from, you know, stocks or bonds or sales of a business, but also to defer and essentially eliminate recapture tax from the sale of real estate as well. So there are a lot of opportunities. Yes, it's something you have to be aware of. It's something you have to consider in terms of the sale. You're going to be hit with this tax on the sale, but combine it with other strategies, combine it with buying other properties, et cetera, and you should be good.
Very cool. Lots of golden nuggets there. Thank you for that. So I knew that I had this podcast recording coming, and this morning I got an email from a CPA that I follow. And the subject line was COSEG studies can backfire. Two examples how. And, you know, the two examples, you know, the first one was selling a property at a loss. And he was saying how a lot of short-term rental investors have gotten, you know, into COVID when, you know, people were setting up Airbnbs and things like that. And they would buy these properties and then now they're selling them because they haven't had the occupancy they planned on. They're selling them at a loss. And they basically was talking about that their adjusted basis is now lower because they took the bonus depreciation. And, you know, since they sold at a loss, they would have a higher taxable gain than, you know, otherwise. So maybe you can touch on that. And then the other one, I guess we could just touch on that piece first is, you know, have you seen that happening? And is that like a misnomer or is that something, you know?
That's no, awesome. And I got that email also. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And it is very common. You know, you have to go with your tax advisor. You have to see, you know, what you can do. But yeah, there are certain situations where you're, you know, it is going to benefit from you. And there are certain situations where COSEG is not going to benefit from you. And I mean, you mentioned that you do it on every park that you buy. And, you know, a lot of people do. But you have to make sure that it sits with your business plan, with your business model. If you have investors, you have to make sure, you know, it fits well with them, et cetera. But yeah, there were a lot of people doing things and now, you know, they're kind of stuck. So you have to sort it out.
The other example was selling a couple years after buying, right? So if you're flipping a property or adding a lot of value and then you're going to sell it, would the benefit outweigh, you know, the cost of the study, right?
Yeah.
Is there any other scenarios that you could maybe think of where it could backfire?
Yeah, there are some. I mean, and one of the main things you have to be aware of is, you know, if it, you know, fits for your business plan. Okay, so selling a property very shortly after, let's say a year or two after buying it, you're going to be subject to that recapture tax, you know, very much sooner. And so therefore the benefit of that, you know, arbitrage or the benefit of the time value of money, which is, mm-hmm. you know, using your money to reinvest during that time period is going to be less. However, there are certain occasions where, you know, even selling it over a short period of time may be beneficial for you. But yeah, I mean, I've seen it backfire. I've seen people do it. One thing we always like to do when, you know, we engage with a client is we provide a free upfront feasibility analysis, like an estimate of sorts. So you can see ahead of time how much it's going to cost. What are my potential tax benefits going to be? You know, what it's going to look like the span over the next couple of years. And you can make a much more educated decision. And, you know, see, obviously, you're not going to do the COSEG if it doesn't make sense financially, right? You're not going to, you know, pay $5,000 to get a COSEG study done to get only, you know, $5,000 back in, you know, deductions, which is going to be, you know, really, you know, like $30,000 or whatever of, or I don't know, whatever, you know, the less money in the after-tax benefit than the actual deduction.
Exactly. Yeah. What should commercial real estate investors expect going forward into, you know, the rest of this year and 2025 in regards to bonus depreciation? again, I got an email from another CPA that said that it was on the docket and it passed through the House, or, you know, it was sitting in the Senate. You know, do you have any, you know, updates on that?
Yeah, there was. I mean, like we mentioned earlier, the 100% bonus depreciation that was passed back in 2017 started to phase out in 2023 and 2024, and it's going to continue to phase out by 20%. There was a bill that was passed in the House that would reinstitute the 100% bonus depreciation for, you know, both 2023, 24, and going forward as well. It failed in the Senate. There was a vote on it and totally failed. However, it is very, from some people that I've heard, that reliable sources, that it is something, obviously, because it was brought back, it is something that is going to come back as well. Meaning, it's the fact that it was put into a bill. Obviously, there are political reasons why people put, you know, the politicians put certain things in bills and pass them or don't pass them. I'm not going to get into that. But if there is a change of administration, then it is very likely that it will come back.
Gotcha. Very cool. Yona, how can our listeners get a hold of you if they'd like to learn more about CostSeg studies or just, you know, tax strategy in general?
I mean, the best place is on LinkedIn. I'm very active. You can also go to yonaweiss.com, but I am very active on pretty much all the social platforms. But yeah, LinkedIn is the best place to find me.
Awesome. And last question, what's one last bit of important advice you would give a interested passive mobile home park investor before we sign off?
As a passive mobile home park investor myself, I think this advice speaks to me as well as it does to anyone else out there listening. And I think probably the most important advice is diversify, right? I mean, it's been said many, many times, not just with different sponsors, but different locations, different types of assets as well. I mean, mobile home parks are amazing. I'm invested in them as well as other assets as well. But I think it's just something important. You never want to put all your eggs in one basket, you know, whether it's through different sponsors, diversifying through different, you know, locations, markets, that's a great diversification as well, or different asset classes. So diversification is key. You want to make sure that, you know, not all your eggs are in one basket.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Yona.
My pleasure, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me.
That's it for today, folks. Reminder, please leave a review if you got value out of this show. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Would you like to see Mobile Home Park value add projects in progress? If so, follow us on Instagram at @passivemhpinvesting for photos and awesome videos from our recent mobile home park acquisitions. Once again, that's @passivemhpinvesting on Instagram. See you there.